Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're pleased to announce that this season the Spurs Show is sponsored by Greene King Sport, where football is more than a game. Greene King Sport venues are showing every single televised Spurs fixture over the 23-24 season. And with more than 900 sport pubs across the UK, it doesn't matter whether you're based in Tottenham or Tyneside, you can catch every single minute of the action. Keep an eye out during the season for events, offers, content and competitions that put you closer to the action. If you can't get yourself down to the match against the Woolwich Wanderers this Sunday, why not catch it on Sky Sports at the next best place, a Greene King pub. Welcome to the Spurs Show. I'm Mike Lee. If you're one of our new listeners, we are the longest running Tottenham podcast, now in our 17th season. We tend to invite writers of the beautiful game onto the show, along with showbiz fans, many ex-players and many long-suffering fans who follow the team home and away for many years. And tonight is no different. And what a show tonight as we look back at the extraordinary comeback at the weekend, and in a special second show at the end of the week, look forward to the North London Derby on Sunday. But first, we have to discuss our best start to the season since 1965. And Ange Postecoglou's extraordinary stat now of 50 home games managing unbeaten. The latest comeback win in Premiership history was us, our win at Leicester City and those two Stephen Bergwijn goals. And we've surpassed it now with two later goals at the weekend. Are we now truly the comeback kings as a rocking Tottenham Stadium remained full even when a goal down? A sign of new things to come? Joining me tonight, the children's author of the best-selling Jamie Johnson football books, Dan Friedman, another writer of books including The Looked After Kid, Colour Me Father, and numerous music and football books, Paolo Hewitt, and the advertising and marketing guru, Jay Pushkin. How are we, gentlemen?
All good, thank you, Mike.
Oh, there we go. How are you, Dan?
Yeah, happy and lovely to see you.
It's been a while. It's been a while since you've been on. It's nice to have you, Jay. It's been a while since you've been on.
Yeah, I think I get the September call.
So, yeah, you do.
Yeah, no, it's good. You're in a much... Yeah, I was in a good place last time, so I seem to get a good luck charm. So there you go.
Absolutely. And Paolo Hewitt returns. How are you, Paolo?
Yeah, great.
Well, we've got to start with an extraordinary weekend. I mentioned one of the stats there. Best start since 1965. Best comeback, latest and time-wise comeback in Premier League history. We've done it twice. We were teams for years. We never got last-minute goals. We never got last-minute. That was always the Woolwich down the road with the last-minute goals. But now we're doing it. Quite incredible. Dan, obviously, I mean, I think you're all there. Dan, you were that day. Was there any kind of sense when it was a goal down, it was a goal against a run of play, a long throw bounced over, people's heads went in? Did you sense anything in the crowd like last season? Or do you sort of sense, like I do, there's a different feeling? There's a different feeling this season. And I know we've got the Woolwich at the weekend. I kind of think about it. It's a bit like them last season. There was a bit of togetherness and we can do it and the fans are up for it. It feels like now we're playing front foot football. That feeling has come back to us as well, hasn't it?
I agree with what you say. Like, it was almost like Arsenal resembled how we were under Poch, and now we, in a way, are reflecting how they were last season. To answer your question, I think even Ange commented afterwards that the fans were remarkably patient, and that kind of reverberated around the stadium and onto the pitch. And even in those last few minutes, I think the accent from the coaching staff was about discipline, wasn't it? And so, yeah, we went to three at the back, but it still looked like the same team and the same tactics rather than just throwing the kitchen sink at it. So I think thanks to the positive start and the really lovely energy that there is around the club and the team, particularly at the moment, I think that the fans played their part with their patience on the weekend. I don't know what everyone else thinks, but I think that was quite an important element of the victory, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Jay, I mean, his substitutions were at the right time. God, we've had so many managers when Mourinho or whatever, and there are no substitutions or far too late and they don't affect things, or Conte bring a defender on. He seems to be getting all that right. There's a younger spirit, certainly within the players, that I think has helped. The celebrations at the end showed you the togetherness. Some was talking about the Spurs family rallying around Richarlison. There's a bit of a bounce. I mean, and let's not count all. It's early days, only a few games. We haven't really played anyone really, really decent yet. We'll talk about Sunday later. That's obviously the first big test. But let's be honest, no Tottenham fan thought we'd be at this stage already this season. Did anyone, Jay?
No, not at all. And I sat there with my son going on the subs, and I said to him, I'd change that whole front three. And he did. I've never seen a manager do what I thought before. So maybe I was thinking right. But Ange seems to get what the fans want. I don't know. But going back to what Dan was talking about when you were talking about patience, I felt really calm when we were 1-0 down. But the guy next to me, I've sat next to him since we've been at the stadium, I think he hates football, honestly. Him and his son came, and then just before that corner, Porro, we're down in the north stand corner. Porro didn't chase the ball out for a corner. And we were thinking, oh, that was a bit slow. And then Hammer came over and took the corner. And the guy next to me went, oh, look, it's Hammer time. And then it went out for a throw, and then Hammer scored. And I said, oh, you're right. And he said to me, I thought you said it was different here now. I thought you said we were supposed to be excited. We're losing 1-0 to Sheffield United. So I said, well, I've only been to one game here. I've watched all the others, but there's only been one game here, and the atmosphere was amazing. I said, give it time. There's still a lot of time left. There'll be loads of injury time. Mm. He went, no, I can't be bothered. I'm off. Oh. And he left on 85 minutes. Good. I can't wait to see him at the Liverpool game.
Wow. Unbelievable.
So
Unbelievable.
there are still some fans that don't believe. There are still some that are not 100% there. But I would say 99% of the fans were brilliant. And they were exactly as you said. They were patient. And we stayed. And you could see it was coming. When Brendan Johnson scored that goal, that wasn't a goal, you could see, and I think the patience was there. He changed that whole front three, which was great, gave us completely, that is the plan B, I think. People say, oh, he only plays one way, he hasn't got plan B. Well, Johnson, Richarlison, and moving Kulu inside and putting Perisic on the right, on the left-hand side, that changed the whole way that we played. Completely, it's much more direct, and Perisic actually had some amazing deliveries. So, no, it was very exciting. Really enjoyed that.
No, it was great. Paolo, are you another one that's kind of felt a sort of change amongst the fans, a change amongst the players? There's a kind of, you know, better atmosphere. There's a smile on the face of the players now. Are you sensing that as well?
In our final game last season against Brentford, I think, we lost 3-1. Park Lane end was singing, "We're shit." That's what they were singing. I couldn't believe it, but that's what they were singing at the end of it. And on Saturday, the Park Lane end looked like it had all been given one big ecstasy because it was just incredible. The turnaround in, you know, such a few months has just been, I mean, you couldn't wish for better, could you?
It's not even a few months, really. I mean, the season's what, 6 weeks old or something like that? I mean, it's
incredible. I know, but when
incredible.
He came in and we saw what he was doing in pre-season, you know.
Mm.
I mean, and also, like, he was an unknown entity, wasn't he? We knew he was Celtic and, yeah, they'd won the Scottish League, but we all had doubts, no doubt. And it's just quite remarkable, really, to go from "we are shit" in May to just unbridled joy in September. You know, it's quite something.
Yeah, Dan, I mean, what's also probably quite good is obviously a lot of new players have come in, but these are new players that didn't work under Conte, or someone like Bissouma didn't get a look in with Conte. So you're not taking loads of old players and going, "Oh, we've always done it this way." Kane's gone, Dar's not getting in, Luis is not getting in. So you've got all these young players again, you know, obviously Ndoggi, Madison's new, Porro's pretty new, Van der Ven's pretty new, all coming in. And they don't know anything else. And I think that's really sort of helped them. Just doing, I mean, the second goal particularly, Dan, when you look at the pressing, few minutes to go, pressing, winning the ball, couple of little passes, it was a brilliant goal.
It really was. And I think we've got to, Jay mentioned it, I think we've got to give credit to Perisic, not just on the assist, you know, the delivery for the first goal, but that little flick inside the second goal was fantastic. You mentioned Bissouma. I must say, it's really interesting because we've got this brilliant leadership trio. But if I'm honest, it feels to me like Bissouma's team. It feels like he is right at the heart of it. And then just, you know, you're talking about the players that were there and the manager. And I've got this theory, really, and I think probably quite a lot of people agree with it, that the manager's transfer fees are so incredibly undervalued. In that, if a manager comes in and really does their stuff, they can increase the value of players by 60, 70 million, you know, per player, if we're taking, for example, Bissouma as a specific case. Not to mention the value it puts on the club when you have this different kind of outlook and energy. I think a good manager transfer fee should be closer to 200, 250 million. And yet, apparently, one of the reasons we didn't go for Arnie was because it was like 10 or 15 million that was the money that would have taken to get him out of Holland. So, to come back to your point about the second goal, absolutely brilliant second goal. And I do think that Perisic, another one of those players whose value has rocketed up, not necessarily financially because of his age, but in terms of the contribution to the team. And it was just absolutely fantastic, electric second goal. And I really feel as though that flick from Perisic unlocked it.
But you said, Jay, you said it's true about that patience. You know, how many times have we been down the lane, Tottenham State, want to call it, where teams like Sheffield United waste time, the low block, I just call it defending deep, men behind the ball, and it's just difficult to get around the men. I mean, Man City had the same problems as well. It's very, very difficult when you defend like that. And there's been so many years where we kind of really run out of ideas. I was watching the game thinking, oh, you know, if Kane was here, maybe different. But we've got players now that will try something different. It's lovely. I can't remember the last time I saw a midfielder at Tottenham like Bissouma, probably Dembele, who went deep, demanded the ball, got the ball off the central defender's toes and burst forward with the ball. Was so used to that Mourinho Conte where they stay in their position, that's it, they're not moving and all that. It's so nice to see players playing with sort of passion and just that kind of energy of just give me the bloody ball.
Well, Dan's right, but Bissouma is the heartbeat of that team. I mean, going back to, I think you said earlier about Conte, you know, what did he have to learn? I mean, football is complicated. It's a simple game complicated by people for no reason. What did Bissouma need to learn that he wasn't doing to not play last season? The guy is that when he ran through, the whole of Sheffield United's defence. Unfortunately, the keeper did make a good save, but you know, that's the sort of player we've been crying out with for since Dembele left. We all thought Ndombele would be that, but he's not. He wasn't. But Bissouma, I think, is absolutely magic. And I just love that midfield three, to be honest. I think you've got Sarr's energy, Bissouma's energy, and the craft and guile of Maddison. He was a bit of a wind-up merchant. He's a typical Spurs player, isn't he, to be honest? he's a number 10 that we've always had. Going back to, you know, Hazard and Glenn and you know, those sort of players going back. Absolutely. He's that midfield general in Bissouma, and you've got the guile, etc. of Maddison. I think going back to what you're saying about all these new players, it is a completely new team. Really, there's only Romero and Son that really, and Kulu probably, that played last season. It'd be interesting when Bentancur gets fit as to how he fits in there, because he's special as well. He is a special player. Mm. And maybe young Sarr will miss out, but Sarr's got years ahead of him. It's very exciting midfield, that.
Yeah, but Paolo, I mean, the thing with Sarr as well, what I love about Sarr is he gets in the box as well, doesn't he, Paolo? Sarr, you know, he's scored already. He's getting in the box.
You know, like Dan just mentioned transfers. I mean, I think the unsung hero here is Paratici, because most of that team is his, you know, especially, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I love Udogie Destiny.
Yeah.
I think he's
amazing.
Like Bentancur at fullback. I just think he's, you know, not much. Maddison, really, for not much. You know, most of these players, like Vicario, 17 million. I just think Paratici is an unsung hero in all this, because most of those players are his.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, you know, Dan, there's always been, you know, we talked about, mentioned Ndombele. A lot of the big purchases haven't gone right. A lot of these weren't big purchases at all. I mean, we haven't even talked about Brennan Johnson yet, who obviously came on and looked fantastic. I mentioned on the show last week, I think he's going to be a great player. We've got players to come on now. We've got players to change the game. Defensively, we haven't really, really been tested yet. We're going to be tested next week. We'll talk about that game later. That's going to be the first test of where we are. But, you know, I think, you know, it's just nice to go back to that ground and know you're going to see us on the front foot playing exciting football, because that is the Tottenham way. It's been the Tottenham way for many, many years. And when you look back at, God, over the last 50 years, the couple of seasons before we went down, football was obviously awful then. Football was pretty poor under certain managers in the 90s. The football was awful under Mourinho and Conte. But generally, we've always picked managers who play the Tottenham way. You can argue with little success. But most Spurs fans I know will say, you know what, I'm more than happy to watch us lose 3-2 each week than a boring 1-0. That's what Tottenham fans want. Obviously, we want to win trophies. We're not ridiculous, but we want to do it in the style that we're accustomed to.
Yeah, on the playing side, I think it's so lovely to have energy and legs. You know, when I was watching the Man United game, I was like, we're going to beat them because they will not be able to keep up with us. Fernandes and Casemiro and Eriksen cannot keep up with our midfield. Secondly, in terms of the players, you mentioned Brennan Johnson. My friend knows David Johnson, Brennan's dad. And you can see him in the way he talks. He's a lovely character. And I think particularly for Ange, and we've all played football, you know what it's like when you've got a group of good guys and you can rely on each other. And it feels like that there is that brotherhood between them. And Son talked about it today as well. And it seems such an obvious thing, but I'm not sure it is how common it is, that they are good personalities. So they've got legs, they've got good personalities. And then, yeah, in terms of the style of football, we used to sing about Gareth Bale being born to play for Spurs. People have commented on Maddison, that he's a Tottenham player. And fortunately, it just feels like Ange was born to manage Spurs.
Mm. Well, I mean, let's hope you're right. And obviously, it's very early days. Jay, I mean, another player that isn't really mentioned. And God, we chased and chased and chased him. And then, you know, when Postecoglou came in, most sort of people went, oh, we won't fit in the system. It was Pedro Porro. Okay, I had a quiet game, but, you know, really important. And again, he's another player that's really, really infectious, great energy. Everyone sort of thought, well, that's the end of him now. But he's slotted in as well.
I owe Pedro Porro an apology because I thought he couldn't play right back, but he absolutely can. Well, it's not really a right back like we know right backs, is it? Fantastic player. And he plays where I sit in the north stand. So on the right hand side, right by our corner. So you see him more than some of the other players because he's the one closest to you. And he does not stop running. He got cramped really badly. And had to go off when Emerson came on. So I think he still needs to work on that last, well, if we're playing 110 minutes, who knows what it is, but he needs to work on maybe the next last 10, 20, 30 minutes, whatever it's going to be. But he definitely suffers because he puts so much in. But both sides, going back to what Dan was saying about and Paolo was saying about Udogie, when he won that ball for the second goal, that's when the whole crowd came up. He pushed on and we saw him and he won the ball and the whole crowd knew what was happening. It knew something was going to happen. So I think both of those two, I never thought Emerson would be easily taken out of the team because he was one of our only good players last year. Yeah. And no, I think Pedro Porro has been a breath of fresh air. He's been great. Really good.
He has. Paolo, obviously the one who's had a lot of news before the game was Richarlison. Played two games Brazil, substituted in tears. He's talked about problems off the field. He's one of these players that you just want him to do well. I've always liked him when he was at Watford and Everton. I was, you know, he's got a bit of devil about him. He falls around a bit. One of those players that a lot of opposition fans won't like. And it was kind of, I almost forgot he was on the pitch. I almost forgot he was on the pitch. And all of a sudden, bum. It was a great header as well, the first goal. It was a...
Yeah.
He found that space, that extra yard.
I'm actually a supporter of his. And I've been saying all the way through that, you know, he should... last season, Conte played him completely out of position, out on the right wing. He's not a right wing. He's a centre forward. And... the thing I love about him is that he gives 100%. He always gives 100%. And I read some, there was a thing he wrote about when he was with Everton and they had their last game and had to avoid relegation. I think it was last season or the season before or something. And what he was writing about was this kind of warrior, you know, I'm going to go and put my life on the line for this club, you know, and he does for us as well. And you couldn't have scripted it better, could you? That this is the guy who comes on with 1-0 down, scores the equaliser and then gets the assist for the winner. I mean, it was just wonderful, and I was so pleased for him. And you know, I it's funny with the forwards now, isn't it? What's the best three up front now? Who are the best three up front? I mean, you know, Sonny had a great game week before, hat trick, great. He was anonymous on Saturday, you know. Kulusevski, me and my mate were screaming for him to be taken off because that's how much we know about football. and he goes and scores. I mean, what's the best three up front now? You got Johnson, you know, Richarlison, you know, Perisic, like you're saying.
But this is a good thing because other clubs won't know what we are and it's interchangeable. And we relied on Kane for so many years. We were never going to get a Kane like-for-like replacement, never, because there isn't
absolutely
one. So they had to look at the system. Well, obviously, you're very close to him. Same pace, power. I think the fact that it is interchangeable and we don't know is a good thing because it keeps players on their toes. Guys, let's go to a very quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. And then we're going to obviously look ahead to this weekend's huge, huge game. Back in a minute.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
And And we're back for the break. Don't forget, for premium content, including a daily news update show, ex-player interviews, original documentary series on Spurs, go to patreon.com/Spurs Show. Support our show in the process. We've got brand new Spurs Show merchandise. We've got the old kangaroo on the ball instead of the cockerel. Loads of other great, hilarious, eye-catching designs. Go to teespring.com. The link is in the description to the podcast. And next week is our first live show of the season, Wednesday, September the 27th, in London's glistening West End. We've got Gary Mabbutt with us, Jerry Cox, Martin Lipton, Theo Delaney. If you want to come to all our monthly events, just go to season.spurshow.net. Sign up and you and a mate can come along to every single event. Or if you just want to come along to that one, again, there's a link in the description to this pod. Come along, that's going to be a great night. And especially, this is going to be the recording of the show after the Woolwich game. So it's going to be interesting to get Gary Mabbutt's take on it. And if you're on social media, you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, and leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts. Dan, the other player that another new player we can talk about, because we've seen him a few weeks now. First game I thought was a little bit dodgy, but already now we're going to love him because he ran all the way from his goal line to celebrate, is Vicario, who I knew very little about, the keeper. What are your thoughts on him so far? One very important save in this game as well, in the first
half. Yeah, I think cautiously optimistic. I think he has been excellent. You can't say any negatives. It feels like that there may be a scenario at some point in the season where something does go wrong in terms of trying to play it out, and there will be a goal which we feel slightly embarrassed watching, but I think we're just going to have to get over it. He came and claimed one, didn't he? Which was very important and relieved a bit of the pressure. He's got good personality. He's got a good height. A couple of goals, I feel like, even the Burnley one, I felt like I would like him to get slightly closer to it. The first one against Burnley. But no, it's very encouraging, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like we spent 50, 60 million on him. It's obviously slightly, as Paolo was saying, it's Paratici related and probably one that the stats have informed. But it's nice, and it's obviously so much room to grow in terms of his youth. So very, very encouraging, you have to say.
Yeah, Jay, the other one, again, who we can mention as well, that's it's almost, I mean, I mentioned last week's show, it really reminded me of Vertonghen, is obviously Van de Ven. You know, again, there's going to be bigger tests to come. Next weekend will be a very, very big test against that lot. What are your thoughts on him so far from what you've seen?
Actually, I thought he struggled in this game.
Okay.
McBurney won every single header against him. But I don't know if that was a tactic from Postecoglou to say, let him win the header, but push him to a place where he can't knock it on to anyone. So if you actually go back, he won everything, McBurney. I actually think McBurney is a hugely underrated player, even for someone wearing pink and green boots. And I think Van de Ven didn't get turned by him, and he's smaller than him, but McBurney did win the headers. So that was it concerning? No, because nothing come of them at all. So he was flicking it on to no one. But I did notice that quite early on that Van de Ven was struggling against him. However, he's a regen of Vertonghen. He looks absolutely like Vertonghen running.
Yeah, he does.
With the ball. I haven't seen anyone really beat him. So, yes, you might be able to get a flick on for a header, but actually on the ground, I don't think I've seen him been beaten. I think he's absolutely been great so far. And considering he's been here 5 minutes, you think like he feels like he's been here for ages. He's great. He's great. So I'm not knocking him at all, but I just noticed that about McBurney. McBurney's a big bully, you know, and I think that was a big test for Van de Ven. I think he, although he lost some of the headers, he actually came through with flying colours against him. So he did really well. Exciting player. He's so young. Another one is so young.
I know. I mean, the most senior player, one of the most senior players now, Pat, is obviously Christian Romero, who has always had his sort of, you know, mistakes and errors and flying and getting booked and sent off. He seems to have been calmed down so far.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
Yeah. What are your thoughts on him?
He seems to have become a lot more measured, and, you know, he's becoming statesman-like, if I could say, the statesman of the defence, you know, because he's there. He's the number one, really, isn't he? And I think, obviously, over the summer or whatever, someone's got hold of him and said, look, you know, you're putting the team at risk here. You know, silly fouls. You don't have to do it. If you have to do it, you have to do it. But, you know, I'm just so glad we've got him. I just think, I mean, aren't his stats the best in the Premier League or something? Somebody told me.
Well, defensively.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him. I saw the one last week saying that.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. I saw the one last week.
It wouldn't surprise me. And he scores goals. I mean, who knew?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There was the stat last week that Kulusevski, before this weekend, had covered the most ground out of anyone in the Premier League, which I thought was incredible. Jay?
Can I just say on Romero, one thing that I noticed on listening to some of the the Match of the Day, the Football Daily, and some of the other, they're all talking about, oh, poor Enzo Fernandez. He had to play in Bolivia at this huge altitude, came back, he didn't have his best game. Oh, McAllister at Liverpool played at altitude, got substituted at halftime. You would never have known Romero played in that same game because he just played for 100 minutes and was absolutely brilliant. Imperious, really.
Absolutely right. Dan, the other thing we need to talk about is the standard of refereeing. It was another, I thought, dreadful performance. He lost control very early. It certainly wasn't a dirty game. I know there's a new directive. If you give a bit of lip to the ref, you throw the ball out. There's certain things that they would have clamped down, which I'm all for. But again, there was this real frustration in the first half. There was, in real time, the Maddison penalty, I thought, when he's been caught. He's absolutely been caught. Then VAR, one angle, you're like, not too sure. You then saw another angle, went, no, there was absolute contact. Son, I think, gave away a penalty last season. Pretty much the same thing. So VAR are looking at what we're looking at, and they're saying there's not a clear and obvious error. We can't overturn it. But it's a penalty. I don't get it. At least you say to the ref, there is contact. Do you want to go and have a look? What are your feelings on that?
It was strange. It mirrored, I don't know if you saw Thomas Frank talking about in the Brentford game, they got a penalty given against them when the goalkeeper pulled out. And he said, but when we played Spurs, Vicario took out our player and no penalty was given. And yet, similarly, the Maddison incident reminded me of the Brentford game when we got a penalty given against us for some very, very similar. Look, it wasn't great. I don't think we need to spend long on it. It wasn't great. The weirdest one seemed to be when the ball was chucked on for the second time. We were on the attack and somehow it ended up with a Sheffield United free kick.
I know.
I don't know whether there's some rule about if it happens twice. It was the weirdest. Look, he was not great, Mike. But I think we got hopefully more positive things to talk about than him on this.
Yeah,
show.
I mean, the only thing that kind of went into our favour, which he did get right, we had on the right amount of time. And God, how many times we've been at Tottenham where you're expecting, you know, that amount of time and like 4 minutes comes up and you're like, how can you not see this stuff? So that's a directive that I'm very, very happy with and rightly so. It makes it a bit, people got certain trains to catch, you kind of look at your watch going, oh my God, this is going to be a bit of a mad rush. But I suppose you've just got to factor that into your sort of journey now. Well, look, gentlemen, let's just before we're going to wrap up, we're going to talk about the Woolwich Wanderers game at the end of the week. Dan, obviously a lot of listeners, big fan of your football books for kids. I believe you've got a new one coming out. Can you let the listener know about that?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, a book called I Am Lenny Brown. It's for 7 to 10-year-olds. And the whole point of it is really about how you can make friends through football. This boy suffers from anxieties and sensitivities and nerves, and he can't speak when he's at school. And it's a story about making friends through football. And I was just thinking about, you know, with Richarlison, how honest he's been about the mental anxieties he's going through, and how lovely it must have been to have his brothers around him and his family on the pitch around him this weekend. And so, yeah, it's just sort of evoke those kind of feelings in a story. So, yeah, if you've got any 7 to 10-year-old kids or grandkids, check out I Am Lenny Brown.
I've got an 8-year-old, so I'll be down Waterstones tomorrow.
Oh, thanks, Paolo.
We'll all be ordering. Is it good for boys and girls, would you say?
Yeah, very much so. Actually, the best player in the story is a girl called Layla, and Lenny wants to be friends with her, and football is what links them. And so, yeah, very much for boys and girls.
I will be ordering it as soon as we stop this recording. Paolo, also got some interesting news, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm crowdfunding a book about my time on the music press, which was like 1980 to 1990 on NME and Melody Maker. And it's like my stories with like U2 and Springsteen and, you know, James Brown and Marvin Gaye. But guess who else is in there?
Who?
The Tottenham Hotspur squad of 1981.
Beautiful.
I'd forgotten all about this. When I was at Melody Maker, I got through the post because we used to get sent free albums. The Tottenham Hotspur Party album.
A great album. I wore it out to death. Beautiful album. Glenn Hoddle singing
War
Is Over.
I looked at it and I thought, I could go and interview these guys. You know, so I called the press office and I went up to, I think it was Chesant. Was it 81? Yeah, yeah. Would that be there?
Yeah.
Anyway, I went up there and I interviewed Archibald, Crooks, Clements and Perryman, right? But the thing was, I interviewed them like they were The Clash. I was saying to them things like, you think the lyrics on this album are going to really affect, you know, people's lives, you know? Yeah. And, you know, do you think politics should be, do you think you should have been more political? Steve Archibald went, this is a bunch of bloody shit, and walked out on me.
Right.
And Perryman and Crooks got it. Yeah. And Perryman gave me this great quote where he went, because we're coming up to the final, and he goes, we sold out Wembley once. We're looking to sell it out again. And if we do, and we do well, then we'll go to Europe next year. We'll tour Europe next year.
Nice.
And then Garth Crooks goes to me, yeah, we're a band who take our health very seriously. And once in a while, we have a kickabout on a Saturday afternoon.
Very nice.
So it's all stories, like that.
I've seen on your social media, you're drip feeding a couple of lovely stories in.
Yeah, I'm going to launch it on Thursday.
There was one you mentioned about the late, great, very much Miss Terry Hall of the specials, which made me laugh today. So, can you regale us that one?
He was in the Fun Boy 3, and in those days, they still do, but a lot of the time bands do like 5 interviews in a day. And I interviewed them. And at the end of the interview, Terry Hall said to me, well, I've got to say, of all the writers we've spoken to today, you're the smartest. I thought, oh, God, that's amazing. You know, my questions must have been really good. My interview technique was, you know, 10 out of 10. You know, I went home really happy. And the next day, the press officer called up and we were talking away. And she said, oh, by the way, did Terry tell you how smartly dressed he thought you were?
And you've always has been smartly dressed, Paolo.
I just went, yeah, like that.
Fantastic.
So it's all stories like that, you know. I'm going to launch it on this Thursday.
Well, amazing. Well, again, let us know. We'll plug that on the Spurs show, certainly.
Just before we finish,
please
sorry,
do, Jane.
Did anyone see when Sheffield United scored? Did anyone see that guy that fell off the roof and went onto the pride flag?
Yeah,
he just literally fell off the tier,
yeah, really.
Went on the pride flag, and then somebody found it on Match of the Day. I wonder what happened to him.
Yeah.
Wow. When he woke up and he found they lost as well.
I'll tell you what I love was James Maddison going down pretending he had cramp after that goal. Did you see that?
Yeah.
That was just beautiful, man. Yeah, exactly. I love that.
Well, look, Gemma, thank you so much. We'll be back at the end of the week looking ahead to this weekend's game at the Woolwich Wanderers. It's the game you never enjoy, you endure. And we'll be talking about that later at the end of the week. For now, Dan, Jay, Paolo, thank you so much. Until later on this week, Curry Spurs! If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.